This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Christine Russo lost her brother Dominic when Mackenzie Schirilla drove 100 miles per hour into a brick wall. Two people are dead, one person convicted of murder. And the months since a Netflix documentary put the case back in front of millions of people, Christine has watched Schirilla's Instagram following explode past 40,000, watched a free Mackenzie Schirilla Facebook page grow past 20,000 members, and listened to recorded jail calls where Schirilla's mother talks about writing a book while her daughter talks about modeling after she gets out and laughs about how famous she's become. Christine launched a petition. She calls it Dom's Law. Victims before influencers. She wants Ohio to modernize its Son of Sam statutes to cover the creator economy, monetize social media, influencer platforms, crowdfunding, sponsorships, merchandise, paid content, and proxy accounts. Hundreds of thousands of people have signed it. Her cause is righteous and her grief is real. And the law she's asking for will almost certainly be struck down. Not because she's wrong, but because every version of this law for almost 50 years has met the same fate. Son of Sam law. That's what we're getting into today. And as we do, your thoughts, your opinions, I'd love to hear them. There's no right or wrong on this. In the comment section on Substack and YouTube, those links are in the description. To give you some context here and where this might be going, let's talk about it. The original Son of Sam law was passed in New York in 1977, named after serial killer David Berkowitz. Publishers were circling after his arrest, ready to pay him for his story. And the legislature did what legislatures do when the public is outraged. They wrote a bill. Executive Law Section 632A, so that if you commit a crime, you don't get to sell the story of that crime. Any money you make goes to a victim's compensation fund. The concept was morally clean and legally intuitive, and nobody with a conscience really could argue against it. Then in 1991, the United States Supreme Court struck it down unanimously, not because the government lacked a compelling interest in compensating victims. The court acknowledged that it did, but the law imposed a financial penalty on speech based on its content, and the First Amendment doesn't allow that. It doesn't matter how repugnant the speaker is. You cannot single out a category of expression and say this speech costs you money, but that speech doesn't. The statute was so broadly drafted it could have been used to seize profits from the autobiography of Malcolm X. That's what overboard means in constitutional law. And the court wasn't subtle about saying so. More than 40 states had already passed their own versions by then. The dominoes fell one after another. Arizona's Son of Sam law was struck down in 2000. California's fell in 2002, challenged by a man named Barry Keenan, convicted decades earlier for kidnapping Frank Sinatra Jr. Massachusetts lost that same year. Nevada's was struck down in 2004 over a prison memoir written by a man convicted of voluntary manslaughter who'd already served his 3 years. He wrote a book about the experience. The victim's family sued for royalties. The court said, nope. 40-plus states passed these laws. Courts kept tearing them apart. The pattern has never really broken. Legislatures write them on a wave of public anger, and courts strike them down on constitutional speech protections. The emotional math works. The legal math, not so much. Ohio already has Son of Sam laws, written in the 1970s. And the law they have covers what those laws were designed to cover. Book deals, movie rights, direct compensation for selling the story of a crime. Ohio House Bill 505, introduced in 2025, would extend that to crowdfunding platforms. And it was inspired by a separate case where more than $55,000 were raised on GoFundMe for a man accused of killing a Hamilton County Sheriff's deputy. Dom and Davian's law goes considerably further. That petition calls for restrictions on monetized social media accounts, influencer platforms, crowdfunding, sponsorships, merchandise, paid content, and proxy accounts. It proposes mandatory disclosure of all monetized social media and business arrangements connected to crime-related notoriety. It asks for courts and parole boards to have authority to impose case-specific restrictions during supervised release. That is an enormous amount of ground to cover. In the modern economy, monetized social media, sponsorships, merchandise, and paid content are not niche activities. That is a description of how a significant portion of the American workforce earns a living. More than 200 million people globally identify as content creators. For millions of Americans, their social media presence is their livelihood, their resume, their storefront. The original Son of Sam laws tried to do one narrow thing: stop criminals from selling their story of their crime. And the court said even that was too broad. These new proposals are trying to cover every revenue stream that could possibly be connected to notoriety, casting a wider net with weaker constitutional rope. Now, Gypsy Rose Blanchard weighed in on the Shirilla case, of all people. She said she believes Shirilla specifically should not benefit from social media. And she drew a distinction. In her view, people who survived terrible circumstances and committed crimes in response should be able to sell their stories, but Shirilla's case is different because there's no sympathetic story behind it. Let's take a look at his drawing that line for just a moment, shall we? Gypsy Rose Blanchard pleaded guilty to second-degree murder in the death of her mother. She served roughly 8 years. She was released on parole in December of 23, and since her release, she's built an estimated net worth of approximately $3 million. She has close to 10 million TikTok followers. Reports indicate she can command up to $100,000 per sponsored social media post. She's appeared in multiple documentaries and a Lifetime reality series. She has a book deal. She earns from brand partnerships, monetized content, and sponsorship agreements. Every single item on that list is something the Dom and Davian's Law petition wants to ban. And I got news for you, Gypsy. You'd be on that list too. Gypsy Rose Blanchard is not a commentator on this issue. She is the single clearest illustration of why these laws won't work. She pled guilty to murder, served her time, got out, and built a multi-million dollar media empire on the fame that killing her mother generated. She found every gap in the existing legal framework and walked straight through them. And now she's standing on the other side telling Mackenzie Shirilla the door should be closed for you, bitch. That's not moral authority. That's the person who exploited the loophole telling the next person in line that the loophole shouldn't exist anymore after she's already used it. And that exposes the fundamental problem with every version of this legislation. No crime is black and white. Blanchard's story involves Munchausen by proxy, years of documented harm inflicted by her mother, circumstances that generate real sympathy from people who learn about them. But sympathetic backstories do not create legal categories. The moment you write a law that tries to distinguish between the convicted killer with a trauma history that the public finds acceptable and the convicted killer without one, you're asking the government to decide whose suffering counts. That is not how the First Amendment works. And it's not how it should work. Because the Shirilla case is not as simple as the public wants it to be either. A childhood friend named Jana Maynard described Mackenzie as someone who has been violent and erratic since childhood, but she didn't aim that description at Mackenzie alone. She described parents who never imposed authority, who wanted their daughter's approval more than they wanted to raise her, her words were blunt. Mackenzie runs her show, runs her parents. They shouldn't have been her friend. They should have been her parents. Maynard said Mackenzie's mother seemed like one of the girls instead of acting like a parent. The Netflix documentary revealed the family allowed their 13-year-old daughter to begin a relationship with a 17-year-old and later let her move in with that boyfriend while she was still in high school. None of that is a defense of murder. Dominic Russo and Davian Flanagan are dead, and nothing about Mackenzie Shirley's upbringing changes that. But this context matters for the legal conversation because it proves the point. The moment you try to sort convicted killers into categories of sympathetic enough to have a platform and not sympathetic enough, you're standing in a subjective wasteland that no statute can map. Even Dominic Russo's own father, Frank Russo, said after the conviction that he didn't support a life sentence. He said, she was a kid who did a terrible thing. He said he wished there was a way she could get help, some kind of treatment. If the victim's father can hold that kind of complexity, the law should be able to as well. The question is whether it actually can. And that brings us to the tension at the center of all of this. The one that makes the whole debate harder than anyone wants it to be. We have a criminal justice system that sentences people, incarcerates them, and in many cases releases them. That is by design. Parole exists, sentences exist, and when a person walks out of a correctional facility, the system delivers a clear instruction. Go, reintegrate, get a job, become a functioning member of society. But the society we're asking them to reintegrate into runs on social media. It does run on content creation, on personal branding, on the creator economy in some lanes. For an entire generation, an online presence is not a separate form of real life. It is real life. It is how people find work, build professional identities, and contact and connect with communities. So when a proposed law says a released offender cannot have a monetized social media account, cannot accept sponsorships, cannot profit from any notoriety connected to that crime, we need to be honest about what we're actually proposing. We are telling someone we've deemed fit to release that they cannot fully participate in the economy as it actually functions. We're creating a category of citizen who is technically free, but permanently restricted from the dominant form of modern economic and social participation. That may be the right answer. Maybe society decides that trade-off is worth it. But we should call it what it is, and we should acknowledge that the constitutional framework this country has operated under since 1791 has a long and consistent record of saying you can't do that. Legal experts have pointed out that while Shirilla is not sympathetic, which makes restrictions on her seem appealing, broader statutes could affect people involved in protests, political movements, or other controversial events who later want to tell their stories. That concern was at the head of the Supreme Court's original decision, and it does not go away because the person we're trying to restrict right now happens to be somebody nobody feels sorry for. Bigger picture here, folks. If there is a visible legal path here, it is narrow. Some states have started building specific guardrails, directing money to victim compensation funds and requiring that victims' families be notified when a convicted person seeks financial gain connected to their crime. That approach is procedural and targeted, and it has a better chance of surviving judicial review than a broad plan. Case-specific restrictions imposed by courts or parole boards during supervised release, individual orders, reviewable, tailored to the facts of a particular case, are probably the strongest tool available. Not a blanket statute that covers every convicted person in every situation, but a scalpel applied case by case. A broad statutory prohibition covering monetized social media, sponsorships, crowdfunding, and content creation by convicted offenders has the same constitutional DNA as every Son of Sam law that has been struck down since 1991, except it's reaching for considerably more territory. Christine Russo should not have to watch her brother's killer build a following from inside a prison cell. No family should have to sit through that. The emotional case for Dom's law is airtight, and I don't think a reasonable person could hear her story and feel otherwise, but the legal case has the same fractures it has had for half a century. The new proposals don't repair those fractures. They stretch them wider by trying to cover more ground with less constitutional support. The original laws tried to stop book deals and couldn't survive the First Amendment. Now we're trying to stop Instagram accounts, TikTok followings, GoFundMe pages, and brand partnerships. We live in a country that makes choices. We choose to release people after they've served their time. We choose to tell them to reintegrate, and we choose to operate a digital economy where attention converts to currency, and anyone with a phone is a potential creator, just as you are a potential consumer. Those choices carry consequences for the creators and the consumers. You don't want these people profiting? Don't consume their content. It's as simple as that. What's this? Millions of people want to consume the content of those people? Well, that seems more like a society problem and less like a creator problem. Choices carry consequences. And one of those consequences is that some people we find morally repugnant will find ways to convert infamy into a living. The Constitution does not care whether we like them. It never has. We've been trying to write this law for 50 years, and for 50 years, it keeps coming back with the same answer. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Could it work? Could there be a version of this that functions? So far, even the skeletal versions of this law have been struck down. Expanding it is an almost guarantee that it will be struck down, but it sure sounds nifty and nice and like you're fighting the moral victory and the moral fight to say that there should be this law. And I get it. Are we wasting our time, though, doing that? Could we be using that energy and those thoughts for a better good? Could it be more effective than playing whack-a-mole with a game that's on free play? I'm Tony Bruschi. I look forward to getting your thoughts in the comments section. We'll continue the conversation right there. Be sure to press subscribe. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.